growing up with a disability, it was never brought to my attention that having a disability was a negative thing at all. Like, my parents raised me, like my two younger sisters, in the quote unquote normal way. And it was never brought to my attention that I was any different from anybody else.
Hey, and welcome to the Role Models Podcast. I'm David Noel. Role Models is a series of conversations with people who inspire us. We capture and share the stories of the people we look up to, how they got to where they are, the lessons learned along the way, the decisions they made, and the challenges they've tackled. My guest on this very first episode is Jillian Mercado. Jillian is a New York native of Dominican descent, a graduate of the New York Fashion Institute of Technology, and a professional fashion model represented by IMG Models. Jillian has worked on campaigns for Diesel, Beyoncé, Nordstrom, and many others, and as a wheelchair user, she's one of the few fashion models who has a physical disability in the industry. A vocal advocate and activist for more diversity in the world of fashion, Jillian shares the story about how she got to where she is today. So here you go. This is episode one of the Role Models Podcast. Jillian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I need to thank you because you're the very first guest on the new Role Models Podcast. Role Models initially started as a series of fireside chats that we host in Berlin, where I live. Started by my friend Isabel and I 2 years ago, where we wanted to capture and share the stories of people who inspire us. And the idea here with the podcast is to expand that to way more different sectors. And we're now recording this from New York, so we're branching out of New York and out of Berlin. And you agreed to be the first guest on the show, so thank you so much for the time.
No, this is exciting. No, thank you for having me.
So the way we met is interesting. Like, we met very recently ago, like as recent as last week. And we met in an office of a mutual friend of ours. And I was telling my friend about the goal that we pursue with Role Models. And then she said, you have to meet Jillian, who is my next meeting. And so we met in a lobby, and on the way there, she told me that you had a dream of becoming a fashion model. You were looking for role models. You didn't find them. And then you decided to become your own role model.
Yeah.
And I want to hear everything about it. So here we are on the Role Models Podcast. Welcome again.
<Thank you. laughs>
So why don't we start with your origin? Where are you from? How did you grow up? What's the story?
So born and raised in New York City. My both parents are Dominican, so they came to America when my mom was about 20. She had me at 21. We're super young, but so blessed that I was born here. Two younger sisters, two puppies. And yeah, I grew up in the city, went to public school, went to college at FIT, which is Fashion Institute of Technology, and I studied merchandising management. So that kind of what started, like, in the voyage of being in the fashion world.
Which neighborhood did you grow up?
Manhattan. Yeah.
And where exactly there?
Upper West. Yeah.
Cool. How was that growing up there?
It was nice. If any of you guys have ever been to the Upper West, it's very calm and a lot of families and a lot of dogs. So I grew up in a very, like, peaceful neighborhood. Nothing really much happened in the neighborhood that I grew up in. But yeah, compared to like other parts of Manhattan, it was a very quiet, beautiful in the spring. I lived a block away from Central Park. So it was always magical.
One of the few quiet places in
the
city.
Yeah, exactly.
And your passion for fashion, like where is this rooted?
Well, it started a very long time ago. I just didn't realize it was a career or a thing that you can venture off and, have as a career choice. My both parents had a lot to do with it, actually, thinking about it now. My mother was a seamstress, so she used to do a lot of baby clothes and like embroidery, on the clothes, working in a factory downtown. I was actually talking to her about it the other day, and she said it was a factory on 50th Street on the west side, and she doesn't remember the name. But if anybody knows, a lot of factories, if they're all gone, will be gone. And my dad was a shoe salesman, so I knew a lot about brands and fabrics and how to sew at a very young age. And it was always very fascinating for me to like sit with them as they like talk about whatever they're going to talk about, like work and stuff. And my two younger sisters definitely was uninterested in any of that, but I was very, very always interested in asking questions and how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you like sew pants or do a shirt or whatnot? And then like when I grew up, I'm like, you know what? I want to do something that I really love doing. And my mom used to tell me that whatever career choice I end up doing, you have to love it with all your heart. And you don't want to go to an office and feel miserable every day, waking up and going to that place. So she said, just make sure whatever you do will support you, but make sure you love it with all your heart. And I was like, well, this fashion, funny enough, I love the good and the bad of it. So
what is the good and the bad of it?
Oh God, how long do you have? I mean, for me personally, is just how creative it can get and how many branches it has, and it's its own universe. It's a very small universe, funny enough, but it's a very fascinating one. Just, I mean, everybody wears clothes, and everybody, even if they don't want to say they hate fashion, but they live in and breathe in it every single day. So it's something that's never going to go away. And the bad of it, I mean, it's a very microscopic also career, and everything is looked tenfold. So if you stand out in the slightest, people will acknowledge, which is funny.
So you know, it is that when I don't know much about fashion, right? But I associate it with a form of identity, right? Like, mm-hmm. One growing up, it's when you form your identity, and then clothes play a big role in it, right? So to express your identity. So that's my limited knowledge of the fashion world. So you were influenced by your parents to pursue a career in fashion, but also a passion in fashion first before it became a career. And you mentioned that your parents were very supportive of whatever you choose. How did you end up turning that passion into a career?
Well, like I said before, I really, really needed to like go 110% in anything that I do. I mean, that's just anything. It doesn't even have to be work. It's just anything in life that I do. It has to be like go all in or nothing. And finding exactly what avenue I would take in fashion was very much of what do I pull towards? What's like my, how do I explain? Like, what would I like love doing and not like, if I didn't have to eat for like 2 days, which never happened really, what would I dedicate my time to? And even at the worst of times, for example, like, you know, you spend all night doing a project, is it going to be worth it? And if it's going to be worth it, then that's how I picked what, and my path changed a million times before. I mean, it's still changing today, but right now I have a kind of steady direction at the moment. But I mean, I started wanting to, even before fashion, I kind of wanted to be a teacher, which is funny, but that's besides the point. but just to let you know how like my mind has changed like a million times.
What age were you there?
When I decided to be a teacher?
Yeah.
Or when I was like, I don't know, the 9, 10.
Okay.
I was really young.
And at what age did
I switch?
Passion really formed and developed?
For fashion?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was maybe during my teen years, maybe during high school, I think.
Was there a particular moment that you trace it back to, or has it been more of a process?
No. Actually, I remember the day, which is really funny you bring this up, but we were picking out colleges, and it was like a junior senior thing, group thing or whatever that they had in high school. We had to pick colleges out, and FIT was one of the colleges in Parsons and Pratt. And I noticed that I kept picking a lot of very creative schools. I was like, okay, this is a really weird way. Just like in the description of each school, I'm like, oh, that's a school I would love to like be in. And then going on tours, I remember exactly the day I went on the tour with my mom at FIT. And it was this weird feeling that I felt like I was at home. And I've never seen the school, and I lived here, and I never went into it for any sort of reason. And just like the whole tour, as the lady was speaking, I really wasn't hearing what she was saying, but just being at the school, I don't know, it took me in a weird dimension, and I was like, well, this is kind of the place I wanted to be.
What was it that made you feel at home there?
I don't know. Maybe it was the dedication of the students. Every time we would like walk down a hallway, and how beautiful the artwork was on a wall, and I don't know, and that every professor had a career before they were a professor, so they were really in the business, and they could give you a personal outlook on how the good things and the bad things about choosing this career. And I thought that was amazing.
And for people not familiar with FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology, can you describe what kind of school it is and what you then pursued as studies there?
Yeah, I mean, they have so much majors now, but it's basically all revolves in fashion. So there's the business side, there's the art side, there's art history there. Advertising, communications. It's pretty much every main branch of fashion. And you kind of like dive into one. And I did the business side. So I did all the background stuff, which is funny now that I'm in front of the stuff that I studied behind. But I did 4 years of merchandising management. So I was supposed to be in an office counting a lot of numbers for designers and making sure their like brand goes to stores and further on their career and making people buy their stuff, and which is absolutely nothing of what I'm currently doing now.
So what is the bridge then from studying the behind the scenes mm-hmm. business of fashion to becoming in the front of the scene or on the scene?
Yeah, it was never really like, oh, wait, I don't belong back here. It was almost the journey that I went through. In my last 2 years of college, I interned at a lot of magazine places because I was very much obsessed with magazines. I noticed that I had quite an excessive collection at home and subscribed to every magazine I can think of in the fashion world or art. So I, when picking internships out, I was like, okay, I want to do a really cool internship. And I like interviewed a lot of places. And I did a year at Allure magazine. I remember that was one of my like most favorite internships I ever did. In Condé Nast on 42nd Street, which may not have been the best location, but the magazine was awesome and the people were great. It went from really behind the scenes to kind of behind the scenes.
What is something in your internship that you learned?
Oh, so many things. I mean, acceptance. Which is really odd to say, but in my interview, they really wanted to know like what my plans for were in the future and how can they help me as far as, you know, choosing a good path and a happy path for that matter. I learned about time management, which is very crucial to have in a workplace. Organizational skills. I learned the most proper way to answer a phone call, which was great to learn. And now when I like, you know, call Time, no, it's not Time Warner anymore, it's Spectrum. I'm super like, I amaze myself how I pick up a phone or how I talk to an operator. I mean, there's so many personal things where it was not that they taught me is things that I have observed. The way you like handle yourself as a person and the way you kind of make yourself stand out and have people respect you was something that I learned there.
What is so time management is something that I keep hearing left and right. What is your one tip? Like, what's one thing you've learned in your internship that you still apply today? Is there one?
What?
Is there one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Writing things down, not typing things down. I love writing things down with a pen and paper. It's almost a lost art, which is really sad to say, because I'm not like 100. So, but I love writing things down. I memorize things more writing them down. And that's something that I got to do a lot at Allure Magazine, was writing things down to remember.
So from that internship, what's the next milestone?
So after that internship, I did another internship at Veranda Magazine, which is in the Hearst building. And that was more like home decor. And I did sales. So at Allure, I did editorial and beauty. And Veranda, I did sales, which is exactly what I studied in FIT. So it kind of worked out. But I also, it taught me that that's not what I want to do. So it was a great experience. They're great, great company, great people. I had a great time, but it also showed me a side that I really wasn't happy doing, which is a great learning experience when you can see that before.
How did you notice that you're not happy about something? Like, what are signals or signs that you notice?
Excitement. I was just, an assignment would arrive to me, and I would put 110% in it. But I wasn't fulfilled in a creative way, and I figured that I really like brainstorming, and I really love like doing photo shoots and just creating editorials, and they were more about like furniture and my department I worked at was more about sales and numbers and how much things cost and all that stuff that I just really didn't enjoy at all. There's signs. You know automatically when it's not for you at all.
Any lessons learned in that internship?
If you know you're not happy at something, don't wait long. Mm-hmm. If you know it's just not going to work out automatically, it's like a gut feeling. I love listening to myself. And if you know from the beginning, don't wait 3 months and then leave, because that's time that you could have done something that you're really proud of and loved.
So act on this, on the signal. Follow your gut.
Yeah. Follow your gut.
Don't wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So what's the road like into modeling then from that internship?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more behind the scenes.
So it's still behind the scenes. But I pointed that out because that's one of like the bad side. When I said at the beginning, the good and the bad, and that was something that I went through that wasn't as great. But after that, I worked for 3 years with a celebrity photographer called Patrick McMullen. And I was a creative assistant in his magazine. But that was way much like entering nightlife and entering all the designer, seeing all the designers at like events and clubs and lounges, and that kind of put me more towards the front of things than behind the things, because I got to see them in a social light, which not many can say that they've seen Marc Jacobs at a party or something, which is kind of cool to say. And I did that for 3 years, so that kind of got me a little closer to where I am now, which is in front of the camera. But during college, going back a little bit, I was always sometimes a stand-in model for my friends who studied photography, just to test their light or test whatever the little thing. I don't even know how to, the light, it's like a little box. Oh, it doesn't matter. I was a tester. But I never thought that I would ever become a model, which is what I am today. So working with Patrick, it was really awesome to like be in that world, but not be in that world, kind of a shadow. And then when I left there, I did other little jobs, but getting to the modeling, my first job was for Diesel. And that was my first in front of the scene job, which was really cool.
Would you say that was the breakthrough moment for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, after that day, which I couldn't remember like today, and my whole world flipped completely upside down.
So how did that come to be? Like how does one become out of the behind the scenes in the front scene? Yeah, what's the secret?
I mean, there's not really a secret, right? It's just how your outlook on life. I feel like I've always really tried hard and continue to live a very positive life and just do the things that I still take my mom's advice and doing everything that you possibly can that you love and you do with all your heart, because then what's the point? And when I got the opportunity, and it's all about opportunities too. It's all about taking the opportunity if it's in front of your face, because why not? I mean, you either take it and it's awesome, or you don't take it and then you think about, should I have taken it or should I have not taken it? You never know. You'll never know because you didn't take the opportunity.
But you learn something from it.
But you learn something. Even if you do take it and it's the most worstest thing you've ever experienced, at least you know that it was horrible and you can say that and you can learn from it. For my first job, I had the opportunity, because I met Nicola, which is the artistic director of Diesel, at an event, and we were just, you know, talking about our mutual love of dogs, and I saw him, I didn't physically see him, but I saw a post that he posted on Facebook of doing a casting call for this, spring summer collection, and I'm like, you know what, why not, let me just throw my name in there. I had no idea at all that I was gonna get picked, not because I didn't think I was worthy. I just was like, well, this is a worldwide casting call, there's no way they're gonna see my name in like millions of people who signed up. And then a few weeks later they called me and they say, you're 1 of 26. I was like, what the fuck is that? What? I've literally, like, I looked at that email, no joke, 10 times to see if it was like.
So it wasn't even 26 prank. Finalists. It was the actual 26 people who would be featured in the campaign.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was going on in your mind then?
Total freak out. Total freak out. I mean, the people who, the photographer was Inez and Venu, and they're like legendary photographers, and I was freaking out on that aspect of it. But I didn't want to disappoint, which is funny to say, because I was like, I'm not a model. I don't know how to do this. I've always, like, the idea always crossed my mind. But like you said in the beginning, I really never seen anyone in mainstream media, and I only say mainstream media because that's what I grew up, you know, watching MTV and collecting all these magazines. Yeah. So that's mainstream media, literally was my childhood, like that's all me and a TV and magazines. But you know, I'd never seen anyone, and I've even, like, at that time I googled too, and maybe there were like one or two people who have been in a magazine, but then that's it, then they stopped or it didn't continue. And I was like, okay, well, there's not really anyone that I can, like, take the path or kind of follow their, you know, guide or whatever. And it was really scary. I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm getting myself into, but I'm really excited about it. My gut tells me do it, just because I'm adventurous to begin with. And I did it, and it was really fucking awesome.
So let's pause there a little bit, because I think it's an interesting crossroads, right? It's an interesting turning point. Mm-hmm. Like, you have voices in your head to tell you, you know, what is this? Am I going to succeed? Mm-hmm. But you also have the voices of excitement. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, this is. So what is, did you just throw yourself into that? Or was there a conscious, like, was there a more conscious, bigger goal that you were pursuing there?
Honestly, I kind of just threw myself in there. I had no idea. I think, like, after the fact that it happened is where everything kind of hit me. I guess I should have said this at the beginning, but growing up with a disability, it was never brought to my attention that having a disability was a negative thing at all. Like, my parents raised me, like my two younger sisters, in the quote unquote normal way. And it was never brought to my attention, that I was any different from anybody else. I knew that I, you know, had to wear braces sometimes for my legs, or, you know, had to go to the doctors more than my sisters, or that I had a couple more surgeries than my sisters. Just like little things like that, which to me at that time were just like, oh, you know, just a change of cereal, nothing dramatic. And, you know, I remember my parents saying, well, Jillian, you know, you'll have to work 10 times as hard as your sisters do, just because, you know, you need more help than other people may. But that should never stop you from anything, honestly. She's like, if there's a roadblock ahead of you, you know, take a two deep breaths, look at the situation and figure it out, because nobody else is going to figure it out for you if you really want to cross the other side. And me being me, I definitely wanted to cross the other side. So I stood there and kind of like looked at the issue, and which is how I kind of do with anything now. But yeah, I just went in it because I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is really cool. I've never been in front of the camera. I've always been behind it. And I've always been curious to know like what the models feel like when they're in front of the camera. That was literally my train of thought. And that's it. I had no idea at all. Maybe it's being naive, and maybe it's not me not acknowledging that there was a problem as big as I thought there was. But I just did it because it just felt right. And I knew that it was going to be really cool, which it was.
So you went into the shoot?
Yeah.
And
12 hours.
12 hours?
All day. Yeah. All day. Yeah.
And then you you came out of it, and it was...
You're it like, was great.
Okay, that's
so,
it.
I swear, it was literally like that. I was like, I got home and I was like, holy shit, that just happened. And then I continued my day the next day. It was like nothing happened at all. Two or three months went by. I did not hear from anyone. And I was like, okay, that was an experience I had. And then I just kept with my life. I kept working at the job that I was doing. Like, nothing happened until it came out, and they didn't tell me when it came out, which was like, I was really mad about, but also really excited about, because it was like a surprise party. And it was, then everything happened.
what happened then afterwards? Like, the campaign comes out, it's a big surprise.
It was a big surprise to me, because one, I didn't know it came out, and I was like, I wish somebody told me, you know, to advise social media and stuff. But yeah, it came out, and my photo went viral, which I didn't know the extent of the power of being viral was. But next thing you know it, I'm like on MTV News, on the E! Network, on ABC, NBC, CNN, Washington Post, like all these crazy places to report that I've like, you know, seen or read in my existence of life, and never would I have ever thought that I would be written about in them. Well, in like in a span of a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
What goes on in your mind then?
Like, total freak out. Total freak out, because then, you know, there's all these people asking me questions and how I feel, and you know, the experience, and you're still trying to figure out what happened. So I was just really, it was just a moment. I like even speaking about it now, and it's been like 3 years almost. It still kind of stops my heart, because that moment I was not prepared for, in the way that nobody can prepare you for it. It was not, you know, Nicola couldn't have called me and said, hey, Jillian, by the way, just so you know, you will be viral. I don't think he even expected it to be as big as it got. And then I soon realized why. And at that time I wasn't signed either. So I got all these messages, and I got to do my first morning news show, which was really cool to say that I did that. Did it twice. Today Show and WB, I think it was WB. or the WB, I don't know how they called it. But yeah, and it was amazing. And the response I got, at first I was really scared that the response was going to be a bad response, because then I knew that, oh, wait, this could go really, really wrong. This could go in a really bad direction. And I was figuring out at that time why it could have gone in a really bad direction. Because maybe people weren't ready for such change in that way, especially because it was a worldwide campaign. It was not only like the East Coast or New York. It was the world. Like, my face was on a boat in Venice, Italy, which is really cool to say. And in Tokyo, and places I still have not visited, but my face was there. And I wasn't prepared for all of that. But knowing myself and knowing that I'm a very determined person, and I know that if, like I said before, if I do something, I have to go all in. I had to see everything and I had to read everything. And it was a really good checking yourself situation, where I had to know where I was at the time and see how I am mentally. Yeah. But it was great, because then I got this whole book of responsibilities that I had no idea I was going to get, and if I was prepared or not for it. But the world was like, no, you prepared. you're going to do it. And I'll show you how you are.
From that experience with Diesel, and the, what sounds like a life-changing event in mm-hmm. a way, right? Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that you weren't signed at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, at one moment did you started identify as a model, like professional model?
Yeah, it's a weird concept. It's a weird thing to say too, because when people would ask, oh, what do you do? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a creative. You know, I am an intern at a lore magazine doing like editorials or working on editorials, and that's like, oh, okay, cool.
and then it keeps going.
But when something that has never been done ever, and me having a disability and doing it in the most professional way, it's very much of a mind fuck for people. And it would be too if I were in their position, because I tell this to my friends all the time, and I used to get mad when people would come up to me and say, oh, you're at a bar? Oh, good for you. Like, this is great. Like, congratulations. And I'm like, wait, but you're in a bar too. What does it, I'm confused. And I would get really, really mad about it. And I realized that there's just not a lot of me out there, because of the notion that having a disability is a negative thing. And
did you speak out in those moments?
I do now. I think at that time I wasn't ready to, because I really wanted to make sure what I was saying was, you know, a fact, and not just saying it just to say it, just because it sounds cute and it sounds like revolutionary. But I either wasn't really doing it or ready to talk about it. Oh, yeah, but I do it all the time now, yeah, for sure. Sometimes I actually tell people, like, oh, can I ask you why you say this? And it leaves them in a, wait, what? You know, wait, I'm sorry, what? But it makes people think. And I think that that's more, I think that anything I do in my life now, hopefully somebody will go out thinking further than what they're listening to at the moment.
Yeah. You're now signed to IMG, which is the biggest model agency in the world, or one of the biggest ones. So how do you go from that campaign, which felt more like an experiment, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to try, I'm going to put in my name and see what happens. And mm-hmm. then boom, you're a global
phenomenon.
Yeah, phenomenon. How do you go then? Did this really kickstart your career? And would a like scouts coming, or like what was the process like for you to get signed to IMG?
Yeah. So during the time that Diesel came out and that I got signed to IMG, there was a moment where I wasn't sure to continue. It was a little tough for me, to be honest, to sit down with myself and say, okay, Jillian, you have all these like wonderful messages that people send you of how, you know, I'm inspiring, which is an interesting word to begin in, but that could be a whole another conversation. But how much I've helped them either realize that it is a thing or could be a thing, or just to literally follow your dreams, no matter how you look like, what you know, what kind of disability you may or may not have. And not all disability has to be visible. There could be invisible disabilities too, that people can't see, but they're there. And just a notion of, you know, whatever obstacles are put in your way, if you're really passionate about something, you should go for it and see why not. You know, if there's really nothing holding you back, and by that I mean, if it's not like, you know, country political problems or anything like that, you should, you know, find ways to, you know, especially now with social media and, you know, with the time that we live now, you should just go for it and see what happens. And just live your life to the fullest. But there was a time where I really was having trouble kind of, I don't know, just putting myself in, okay, is this what I really want to do? And do I really want to put myself out there for people? And it took me a second to really, it's maybe a month, I mean, it took me to really sit down and say, okay, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do this. And I would speak to friends about it and even my own family. And again, my mom would tell me, if you're happy with this, go for it. If you're not happy with this, then you have all the right to say no. And you have all the right to like stop and do something else that you want to do. And I remember, you know, being a child and, you know, wanting to be in the fashion industry, but not seeing anyone like me out there and going, okay, I'm 100% sure there's a kid right now trying to figure that out. And if I have the opportunity to help them, why not? Like, why can I not be that person? Especially because I personally know what that feels like. And it's a sucky feeling realizing and Googling that there's no one out there who is doing exactly what you want to do when you know that everybody else is doing it. So then that's when I decided, all right, well, what is the biggest agency in the world? and reaching for that stars. I'm like, I've done a lot of baby steps. What? Let's just jump the ship right now and just go for it. And I got lucky enough to meet with the president of IMG, and we were talking for a very long time about that same notion and about how important diversity is and how important it is to see yourself in, you know, an advertisement or in a commercial or in a show that's actually the person who most resembles your lifestyle or who you are as a person, and how beautiful that could be if somebody sees themselves in me. He was like, all right, well, if you want to go for it, we're going to go for it together. And I was like, that sounds bloody cool. And I signed that dotted line.
That sounds amazing. What a great story. Thank you. So how is this to someone who doesn't know this industry so well? So you didn't get signed, and then what happens? Like, how do you get to do more modeling jobs? And I think you have a long list of really remarkable campaigns that you worked on, right? Like Nordstrom, mm-hmm. and then you had a year ago Beyonce.
Yeah.
And so that's a really nice broad range of different campaigns. And is this almost like opting for a profession at that moment where you go, okay, I'm going to go all in with IMG, and it means that most of my time will be spent, you know, on sets doing campaigns.
Yeah. So I'm now full time doing that. I had a job and it finished in April, and since April till now, almost a year. Oh my God, we're a year.
Last year, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And time flies. time flies when you're having fun. I decided to do it full time. I think it's more important of having conversations and talking about how it's still very, very, very much a problem, especially in the fashion world. Not only having a disability, but even being Latina or being of color in the industry, or, you know, being underweight, it's a big issue as well. And the fact that I can relate and talk about those ideas in my platform and social media is kind of awesome. So that's kind of why I do it and how I do it. I think that me and IMG, especially IMG being IMG and how big they are and how much influence they have with designers and other creatives out there, they can really prove to them, they can show them with like actual pictures and evidence that look, this is what Jillian has done, and this is how it can work, and this is how we can work together. And the message will be so much more than, let's just say hypothetically, selling a watch. It'll be what's behind it, and that's what you want. You know, that's what you want for a company, is to have a message behind it, and have that message not be fluff and not be just another watch, you know. But I think that we both, me and IMG, understand that it's way more important to have a message and to see what's behind the whole thing than just a photo.
So now you are on your blog, manufactured1987.com.
Yeah.
You, in the mini biography on the right, it's also, you identify as an activist.
Oh, yes.
Right. So can you talk a little bit about what that means, what's behind that?
I think I've always been an activist since I have knowledge of the world. But, you know, at first you think about being an activist as like somebody who goes and goes to marches and does this and contributes to the community and blah, blah, blah. And an activist could be as simple as just being yourself. And I feel like for me, although I do all those things now, way more now than ever. I mean, this year alone, which is still not the whole year, but I've been to maybe 6 or 7 marches now because it's super important to me. But all my life, I've been very much an advocate on just being yourself and, you know, doing the things that you love, and having a disability and doing that sometimes clash because society, again, thinks that it's a negative thing. So me as an activist, I just show people that, you know, it's okay to go to the party and it's okay to like do normal things that everybody else, you know, have the opportunity to do. And just because you may or may not, you know, need a cane or a wheelchair, you don't need to stay home just because. You can go out and travel the world and see different places. So I'm very much an advocate on that. But I'm also an advocate on women's rights and animal rights and the fact that we all should really bloody get along and have a conversation about all this. And I am very open about that in my social media, which is something that a lot of people have a hard time doing.
I wish we could sit down for way more hours, but we're running a little bit out of time. So I want to move into a series of random questions.
Ooh, and, exciting.
You mentioned earlier that your mom has had a lot of advice for you over the years.
Yes.
What would you say is the one piece of advice that your mom gave you where you go, like, this is the best piece of advice I've received from my mom?
Oh, wow. So many of this. There's, I don't know how to say it in English, but there's, she calls it like, I don't even know what it's in Spanish. I totally forgot how to even say it in Spanish. God damn it. So many things my mom have advised me on. She's a very traditional person. So she's like, oh, I remember with my grandma said this and this and this. But as far as like life advice,
any advice, life, career?
I mean, like I've said throughout this whole awesome podcast the best advice that she's ever given me was just live life to your fullest, because you never know what tomorrow's going to be like. So you might as well live up that present moment right now.
Do you have a way to remind yourself of this? Because I think it's a great piece of advice and we tend to forget it.
Yeah,
because of a million different things that we deem more important. So do you have a practice where you remind yourself of this?
Yeah, I mean, now more than ever, I am very much into meditation and yoga, and I really try hard. It's really hard. This is not easy at all, especially with like cell phones and having accessibility on everything in your fingertips. But I really, really try hard to at least 10 minutes or 5 minutes every day to kind of stop everything I'm doing, put my phone on like a sleep mode and zone out of everything and kind of, you know, remind myself where I am at the time and the accomplishments that I have done and the things that I'm excited about doing next. And I think that just having that rolling around in my mind for those 10 minutes kind of helped me. Okay, Jillian, now you can continue. So
what is the one piece of advice you would give your 14-year-old self?
Oh, Jesus. Breathe. I think that being a teenager is a very, 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 very difficult time because you're really trying to find yourself and your mind is saying something, yet your peers are saying something else and your family is saying something else, which complete opposite of what your mind and your peers are saying. And then you're there in the middle, like, what direction do I turn to? And I think that my 14-year-old was very confused on a lot of aspects in life. And if I only learned how to kind of breathe and tell myself it's going to be okay and that you don't have to do the certain things that just because other people have said that it's either cool or necessary, you can go in your own path. And if, you know, there's some things that happen sooner than later, then so be it. And if there's things that will happen later in life, then so be it at that too. But breathe.
Do you see breathe as the physical act of literally breathing or the more as a metaphor?
I know. I mean, both. Honestly, breathing is a very great thing that a lot of people forget to do. I can say that because, for example, like when I'm working out and I, you know, that point when you reach, when you work out, you're like, I'm going to pass out. But if you just breathe, you'll be fine. So literally, I mean, breathe, but also I think breathing and just taking the time in and surrounding yourself with positive people and a positive outlook on what's going to happen is also a breathe that I could also think of.
That's a great tag into the next question. Where do you go to seek advice?
Now?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a question. Well, I'm lucky enough to have a lot of really good friends surrounding me. I think I came to a point of my life where it wasn't the amount of friends I had around me, is the quality of friends, if that makes sense. And I have a really strong surrounding of people that look after me and will tell me, you know, if I'm doing something wrong or something that may not be beneficial for my own life or career choice. I'm thankful that I can go to them and say, hey, what do you think about this and that? And, or I'm having trouble in this and that. And I think it's really important to have that one person that you can do that to. My mom also, I definitely talk to my mom and my sisters about, you know, things that are troubling me or things that I may question about in life. But it's very important if you don't have family at the moment with you, to have that one or two people you can go up to. And it's important, even if it's like your therapist, just somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned quality of friends. Can you define that a little bit?
Well, sure. I mean, I can even go personal, but there was a time where I had an amount. I had friends that, quote unquote, were friends, but not really, because when times were tough, they disappeared. And then you're left alone like, okay, well, this is where I really needed you the most, and yet you're not here. And the only time they would show up if it's like a party or something exciting happened. And that's not what a true friendship is about. Or that's not a true relationship for anyone to have. But I think when you're caught up in like all of the awesome things in life, you forget that, you know, having bad times is also a normal thing in life that happens, and that you should surround yourself with people who will be there too, for that, and help you also move on to greater things in life. But I had an episode where I actually had to delete, physically and mentally delete people from my life because they were not there for all of my life. And it's a sucky feeling to feel.
Yeah. This podcast is called Role Models.
Yes.
Do you have a role model yourself? And if so, who is it?
Oh, man. Wow. I feel like there's so many people that I look up to. I mean, I right at this moment in time, right now, I think anybody who's in politics or in the Supreme Court that's a female are my role models, because they're going against the wind and they're standing their ground and they're really, really speaking out about what's wrong in their world. And I think that's very awesome to, you know, to have someone to look up to and say, you know what, they're in the worst spot right now, but yet they are going to their jobs every day and they're talking about what needs to be talked about. They're my role models. It's funny because it's not even a fashion thing, but I really look up to strong women in general. I think that every woman who's really strong and who's really stands up for what they believe in, and especially this time, are my role models.
What do you think is more important, courage or confidence?
Oh man, confidence, I think.
Why?
Oh, because you have to be confident you have to be confident first and then have the courage to do something, right? So if you're confident about something, you're going to go in no matter what happens on the way out. So I'm very much into, yeah, absolutely confidence.
How do you build confidence? For people who are maybe younger or right. earlier in their career and listening to this or are following you on, you know, your steps in your career, what do you tell them to as advice to become more confident?
I think it's not as easy as it sounds. Definitely. It took time for me to even be confident with myself as a person and battling with, you know, what society tells me that the life that I should live, and what in my mind questioning, well, wait, what about if I live this life instead? May not be the life that you guys think I should live, but I kind of want to live this life. It took me a while to really understand that there's no such set rules, and there should never be set rules for how somebody lives their life. And I think that my confidence came from that acknowledgement, knowing that nobody plans out your life. Like, you are your own author of your own book, and you should really take that pen and write and just make that story happen. And it won't, like I said, it's not going to be an easy thing, and it won't happen overnight. But if you do little steps to make sure that you're living as authentic as possible, that goes up to confidence.
Well, I really love the book that you're writing for your own life. And I want to thank you for coming on the show. And one final thing, if people want to follow what you do, where should they go?
I'm very active on Instagram.
Instagram, yeah. Can people find you there?
Yeah, so it's a funny Instagram, but a name for that matter. It's Jilly _ Peppa, like salt and pepper. So Jilly _PEPPA.
Great. We'll put it in the show notes as well. So Jillian, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And all the best to you for your future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, and thanks for listening. Before you go, here's a few more things. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Role Models podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcasting app. If you'd like to support, please rate this podcast and on iTunes and post a review. This will help us reach more listeners like you. And if you have any feedback for us or suggestions for guests, please let us know on Twitter @RoleModels. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.